You're listening to Upon Further Review, presented by Coors Light on the official Raiders podcast network. Here's your host, Eddie Pascal.
Raider Nation, what is going on? Eddie Pascal and Engineer Jim here in beautiful Henderson, Nevada. And how about that, guys? What an afternoon. Thank you for joining us for another episode of Upon Further Review, brought to you by the good people at Coors Light. And joining us to help try to make sense of what we just saw for the past, I don't know, three and a half hours, our pal Jesse Merrick from News3LV here in the desert. And Jesse, are you alive still? How was the heart rate? How's the blood pressure? Because, dude, it's been like, what, about an hour since the game ended, and I'm still like trying to like kind of cool down and get the heart rate to an appropriate pace.
Yeah, well, so I came into the office today to watch the game, and it's probably a good thing I did, because if not, all my neighbors would have been pissed off at me because I was screaming and yelling, just like I'm sure a lot of fans were at home. I mean, that last catch, I got up and I was like, oh my God, like I couldn't believe that it happened. So, I mean, that was wild. Definitely one of those games you got to bust out the defibrillators for.
Yeah, I mean, we did the same thing too, because, like, you know, we watched the games at Allegiant home and away, and, you know, there's a group of, gosh, maybe six of us there. And we're sitting there, and obviously the play before, and you're like, oh God, here we go. And the last play, the 46-yard bomb to Ruggs down the sideline, we saw the ball go up, and we're like, we're like, oh my God, he caught it. But I'm going to ask you, because you are much more of kind of an X's and O's guy than I am. How do you not give your corner a little help on that? Just like a little bit. Like, I don't get it. Like I said, I'm not a huge football mastermind at all. But if you're Greg Williams, how do you not do a little something to ensure that that doesn't happen?
Well, because they've got the first pickup for grabs, man. I mean, come on. They got to figure out ways to lose. Yeah, I couldn't believe it. They go cover zero. They bring, I believe, seven guys. And then they had their safety spying Derek Carr. Okay, I get Derek Carr has done some good things with his legs this year, but he's not Lamar. What are you doing spying Derek Carr with your safety when all they need is a touchdown? You lose with a touchdown. So, like, that guy should have been deep. I don't understand how you make that call, how you put him in that position. But again, I mean, even after the game too, Derek Carr was like, he said he saw it and he was like, ooh, baby. Like, they were licking their chops when they saw that look. I can't believe they blitzed as much as they did throughout the game, as consistently as they did, you know, leaving Waller one-on-one so many times. I mean, a lot of head scratchers for that one, but Greg Williams is known for being aggressive. It's still just unbelievable. I'm sure everybody saw on Twitter, everyone was having a field day. I saw Mina Kimes tweeted out a picture with a tank on it trying to explain the defense. So that's that tank defensive look, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it was bizarre. I mean, obviously, you know, knowing the one thing that Henry Ruggs has in his arsenal, regardless of whether he's had a good day at the office or a bad day at the office, is he's probably faster than you. So the fact that, and he is the one guy on that Raiders offense who is faster than anyone else on the defense. So the fact that Greg Williams didn't do really anything to kind of put these precautions, these protocols in place. I mean, we live in a world now of strictly protocols.
With protocols everywhere.
And Greg Williams did nothing. Greg Williams didn't get nothing. That memo, which is incredibly bizarre to me. But I was on Twitter and I saw all these people. The NFL Research put out a graphic of all the, I think it was over the past 5 years of the like quote unquote Hail Marys or final plays that resulted in wins, like from week 13 on or wherever it's at. And they all have names. And I wonder, is this one important enough for a name? Like, it feels like it's like a step before getting a name. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think if you're a Raiders fan, you have to name it. Maybe on the grand scheme of things in the NFL, maybe not. But you and I talked about it before we hopped on. I mean, to me, I believe that's a season-saving catch by Ruggs there. So I think just for that alone, as a Raider Nation, you guys have got to come up with something good and nice when I'm not witty or creative enough to come up with one of my own. Maybe you are, but
no, I certainly am not. Like, I think there's a lot of things I'm good at, and being creative and witty is not one of them. But I think you're 100% right, though, dude. Where this was a game where not only does it keep your season alive, right? Like, just calling a spade, if the Raiders lose this game, there's still technically a route to the playoffs. But, I mean, that route is about – I mean, it's a mathematical route, if anything else. It's not, like, a realistic way to do it. But not only that, it's such a narrative-saving – kind of moment for this team, because if you go into Atlanta, you take the L, then you come home, you kind of reset the mechanism, and then you fly to New York and you take an L to the winless Jets, even though there's a path, dude. I mean, I think I do a pretty good job of trying to find the positives and like looking forward, but I don't know how you realistically can take a look at the past 2 weeks that the Raiders don't pull this off and say, you know what, guys, we're okay. Like, I don't think you can do it, like, in good conscience. I really don't.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'll be blunt. You don't, you can't, there's no way. I mean, season is done. I'm not a dramatic person at all, but if they lose this game, it's done. I don't care what you do. There's no way that it's going to work out. I don't think so. I mean, you're relying on too many things to happen. You know, now they control their destiny. They play, you know, the Jets, I mean, not the Jets. They play the Dolphins. They play the Colts, you know, two of those teams right in the mix there. I mean, they're still in it. Other than that, I mean, you know, again, what was the record, the combined record of the Jets and Dolphins there?
Oh, Falcons, man. Said? I think they were 3-11-8, so 3-19, if I'm doing my math correctly. Yeah.
Which is crazy. I mean, you lose to teams like that, and you have a completely different narrative around everything in the rest of the season. And, again, it's a young team. Maybe in their mind they start thinking the same thing as well. You know, I mean, they're pros, but anything can happen at that point. And also, I think a really kind of narrative-changing thing for Ruggs as well. I was seeing people on Twitter talking about, oh, bust, bust, bust. He's just a decoy, all these different things. I mean, he redeemed himself on that one. He even said afterwards that he was thinking about how mad his dad was going to be because of how poor he played throughout the game. And, I mean, you know, I just think of the Dumb and Dumber thing. That's, like, my go-to to tweet out anytime someone redeems themselves. And you're like, you totally redeemed yourself. Like, you know, that's exactly what he did this time.
Yeah, I mean, and credit to Derek today, too. Obviously, you know, if he doesn't make that throw and put it exactly where it needs to go, that's not a touchdown, and you and I are talking very different story. But the one thing that I liked about Derek today is especially right after Henry had the ball go off his hands, results in the interception, DC goes back to him the very next series. And I think that Derek has a really good sense of, I'm trying to figure out a better way to put it, but I think he's like a really good people person. I think Derek is really good at reading people. And for him to go back to Henry Ruggs in pretty short order after the interception, you and I both know that there have been big portions of this season that have not gone to plan for Henry Ruggs. And it's easy if you're a young guy like him, you came in with all these huge expectations, and there's been portions of it where you know, you feel like you've left some meat on the bone. But for Derek to go back to him to build up his confidence and then to go to him on literally the biggest play of the season, I mean, obviously credit to Ruggs for making the catch and doing all that, but also credit to DC for having the confidence in him and building him up enough that he is able to go and kind of perform and do what he needs to do in the biggest moment of 2020.
100%. I mean, you hit the nail on the head. You know, as a former scrub D2 receiver who dropped the ball from time to time, my quarterback looked away from me in those situations, and it kills your confidence. But, you know, I can only imagine what it's like on that level in the NFL, and for Ruggs to go back to him, it keeps him engaged in the game because, I can speak from experience. When you have drops or have bad plays, things like that, it's easy to check out. You know, they talk about us receivers being divas. Well, it's a stereotype for a reason because a lot of times it's true. You know, and if you're not involved, it's easy to check out. Ruggs didn't. He stayed connected, and Carr made sure that he stayed connected as well by going back to him, you know, keeping him in the game. And, man, it does take a lot of guts to go to a guy like that. You know, a lot of times you don't maybe have the time to think about it. You just chuck it. But he even said afterwards he's got the confidence in him because he's shown at times, you know, hey, he can come through when you need him to. It's just a couple things here and there throughout the year where he hasn't done so. So that's massive for the confidence of a young guy, especially going down the stretch as well. I don't think you can understate that portion of it either.
You know, and one guy who, I mean, we talk about Ruggs showing up big in that final moment. One guy who showed up big for 60 minutes, Darren Waller. I'm looking at his line right now, and it's like Madden numbers. He went 13 receptions, 200 yards, two touchdowns. Honestly, could have had a lot more than that. Like, how, if you're the Jets, so we look at that first half, and Waller's going crazy. He's north of 100 at halftime. They made some sort of adjustments to kind of take him away in the third quarter a little bit. But how do you not stick to what you're doing? Like, the fact that this guy got 200 yards, he got so many of those in those final couple series. Like, I mean, I know we're scratching our head trying to figure out what the Jets defense was doing today, but, like, at some point, like, guys, you have to make someone besides Darren Waller beat you, right?
I think at some point as a defensive coordinator, you have to start to earn your paycheck in this league, and Greg Williams didn't do that today. It just kind of seemed like to me that he was banking on, hey, we're going to blitz everyone a lot and try and get to you before you can get the ball out. And the Raiders were like, hey, okay, we'll just hit those underneath passes to Waller or whoever it is. And Waller did have a couple big plays. I mean, what, he averages 15 yards a catch. So, I mean, he had some that were down the field, but a lot of the catches you saw from him and a couple of the other guys were real short dink and dunk type passes because the blitz is coming. You got to get it out. So, again, we could sit here all day and try and figure out what the hell they were doing on defense. We're not going to be able to figure it out. That's for sure.
No, we will not.
Yeah.
But,
I mean,
no, go ahead. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, you just got to roll with it. And I think that's something that's very underrated is Derek Carr and the Raiders offense taking what was given to them, even though at times we did see him kind of go three and out at real clutch times in the game. But they took what the defense gave him in feeding Waller. I can't believe they didn't start double teaming him, though. That's I'm beside myself in that.
You know, I'm glad you brought up kind of those three and outs, especially in the third quarter, where we go into that third quarter, you're up by 11, you're feeling good. You feel like, all right, the game is on the brink. We have the ball. We're going to go down. We're going to put some points up, and this game's going to be over. No disrespect to the Chiefs, excuse me. No disrespect to the Jets, but you look at the numbers, they are the worst statistical offense in the NFL. If you put them behind, you know, dramatically, if you make them put up points, I just don't know if they're built to do that. But the Raiders team could not put them away, and they had three chances to do it, and they couldn't do it either of those times. And as a result, you have to lean on that miracle. You got to lean on this literal last second, keep your season alive. So I think that if there is one negative, and look, when you beat a winless team and it takes you literally 59 minutes and 54 seconds, like, I don't know if there's that much to celebrate. A win is a win, especially in the NFL. But gosh, if this team wants to make any noise over the next month, if they really want to end up in this postseason tournament, you got to take advantage of those series in the third quarter, right?
Yeah, you definitely do. And I'll take the low-hanging fruit and say just win, baby. I mean, that's what it's all about, yeah. Right? But at the end of the day, I mean, I'm with you 100% on that one. They shouldn't be in this position against this team. They shouldn't be in the position against the Falcons like they were. You know, a sign of a good team is you beat the teams that you're supposed to beat, and it's not close. You know, obviously last week it wasn't. This week, at the end of the day, to be positive, everybody, don't be coming after us. They got the win. We realize that. But you got to have a better showing against a horrible offense and a horrible team as a whole than you did. I mean, and you can't go three and out like that. You know, at that time of the game, I tweeted it out like three times. Like, okay, this is where you know, kind of squeeze the life out of the Jets. And I'm like, all right, maybe this time. Maybe this time. But, you know, the defense, I think, came up with some stops when they needed to. Klee mentioned, you know, they stopped the run for the first time ever when they absolutely had to. But yeah, you got to see more from the defense, and that's a thread that we've really talked about all year long, and I think we're going to have to continue to talk about it until they're able to address it in the offseason. We just got to say, hey, look, this is what it's going to be, and the offense has to come through.
This was such a weird game defensively for me, and obviously I'll go back tomorrow and I'll watch the game again, but just kind of like first reaction, because there were moments of really, really good, it felt like. Like, I think this was Klee's best game as a Raider. I can't remember seeing Cleveland so active, so, you know, willing to be multiple in things that he was doing. But then we look at the stats at the end of the game, Jesse, and the Raiders gave up 206 yards on the ground, average of north of six yards per carry, to a team that we just talked about a minute ago that is statistically the worst offense in the NFL. So yes, you come up with those big plays when you absolutely have to, but on the other side of it, I don't know, man. I think the easy answer is that, like you said, you got to kind of readjust things and we'll figure it out in the offseason, and some changes have to be made. But it was a very kind of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde type performance from Gunther's guys today.
Yeah, it really was. And I was tracking it through the game. So this is by my count, not an official one, but I think they gave up 11 plays of 15 yards or more throughout the game. I mean,
that's
again,
not good.
To the Jets, not at all, not at all. And so I'm tracking that because, as I told you, you know, I do a segment on our live after the game, you know, of like keys to the game. And I was thinking, all right, I'm talking about how the Gunther defense gave up that many plays over 15 yards to the Jets. But somehow you got to figure out a way to stop it. And I think the easiest way to do that is to make tackles when you have the opportunity to, which is an excuse and easy thing to throw out there. But how many times do we see missed tackles in the backfield or missed tackles a couple yards past the line of scrimmage, and then these runs or these passes turn into much bigger plays? And that's something that I've seen a lot throughout the season from the Raiders. And maybe that's just the NFL as a whole. You know, I mean, they don't practice tackling the way that you see it at other levels, but they really got to figure that out. If they do, they're going to cut down on a lot of those things, and it's going to fix a lot of issues that they've had defensively.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard, though, because you bring up all these points, all these things that you can lean on, right? Oh, they don't practice tackling. Oh, you know, the defense has had no shortage of moving pieces because of COVID, injury, you know, insert excuse here. But at the same time, man, it's 206 yards to the worst statistical offense in the NFL. And I don't know, man. I still have such a hard time. I might be in the minority at this point where I've gotten yelled at for it on Twitter, and I'm sure people will yell at me again. But like, I think that this defense, God help me, is not playing. They will play better football this year. I don't think they're going to be the 85 Bears all of a sudden, but I think they are going to play better defense at some point this year. I don't know when it is. And we just haven't seen a full 60 minutes from them at any point in 2020, I don't think. And I think what's frustrating is we see these glimpses, right? You see the Klee Fleurel. I think Nick Morrow had another really nice day today, but you see kind of these glimpses and flashes, but for whatever reason, they just can't do it consistently. And then you look up and you've been run over for 206 yards.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree with you. You don't want to hold your breath hoping for a better performance from the defense because you might pass out. But, they got to figure out a way to do it. One thing that really stuck out to me in this game, Adam Archuleta on the broadcast pointed it out. When they play in their zone defense, it's a very soft zone. They leave guys with a lot of cushion in those zones and leave a lot of space for guys to find the hole in the zone, which, look, as an offense, that's what you're trying to do when you're going up against a zone defense. You try and find the hole in that zone. But for the Raiders, it always seems like those zone holes are massive. So maybe figure out a way to get on your guys a little more, challenge them a little more, make those throws more of like a thread the needle type of throw for a guy like Darnold, who we've seen struggle to do things like that. You going up against Phillip Rivers, okay, make it tough on him, make him really thread the needle on those passes, start getting hands in there, tipping them up, and come away with center interceptions. We've seen how turnovers can change things for this team as a whole, and especially the defense. But yeah, there's definitely work to do. I mean, when you look at it down the stretch, they're not facing any like prolific offenses. I mean, I know that we've seen Justin Herbert do some things with the Chargers and stuff, but if there's any point of the year where we should see these guys start to play better, it's got to be down this last handful of games here.
Is there any way, and I'm asking more for your kind of your X's and O opinion than your let's look at the Raiders in totality kind of opinion, but is there any way that this team can try to generate more pressure? Because we see like you see three or four plays, you see Klee get home a couple times, but there were so many moments in that game where what we're watching at the stadium, and I go, where's the pass rush? It's non-existent. There are so many times where Darnold has hours and hours and hours back in the pocket, and that really hasn't been that's kind of been the rule, not the exception. So, like at this point in the early December, four games left on the schedule, is there anything Gunther can do, or is this kind of the hand that he's been dealt, and this is what the defense is going to look like through the end of the year?
It seems like it's what you just said with the hand that he's been dealt. It seems like that's how he feels, so maybe he's a little conservative in what he's going to do defensively. Also, too, in this one, I chalk it up a little more to not having a guy like Abram, who they've moved around a lot the last, since they said they were going to go into the lab and make all those changes on defense or start to tweak things to be able to make to get more pressure. After that point, that's where I kind of point to them getting a bit more pressure. They started moving Abram around. They use him as kind of the heat-seeking missile that he is and put him all over the place and make offenses account for him. So I've been a big proponent of saying, hey, continue to do that. Continue to move that guy around, make teams think and bring the pressure. I think one thing, and this is coming from a not super informed spot, but with Corey Littleton, the guy's got some speed. We know that he's a coverage linebacker. Maybe start bringing him on blitzes more, using that speed and athleticism. People have talked about that he's a DB and a linebacker body. Well, let's see that. Or no, sorry, he's a linebacker in a DB body is what I mean there. But start using some of that athleticism on blitz and things like that, and things like that, and maybe count on your secondary a bit more in man coverage. I mean, I've liked what I've seen out of the secondary in coverage as a whole. LaMarcus Joyner aside, I hate going after him because I like the guy, but I think he needs to be better in coverage. So I think maybe that's where Gunther's coming from, is he's probably a little worried about his coverage on the back end and leaving those guys exposed. That we saw him have some success against the Chiefs, where they sat back in coverage and blanketed guys and let the defensive line in the front get to him on a four-man rush. But you can't do that against everybody because not everybody's going to sit back there like Mahomes and move around.
Yeah, and speaking of that secondary, I mean, you just got to feel. I think, once again, another really nice game for Trayvon. Trayvon doing his thing out there. Very quietly, in kind of Trayvon style, very quietly becoming, I think, one of the better cornerbacks in this division. I think when you look around the AFC West, if you want to talk about stud DBs, I think that Trayvon has kind of put himself in that conversation. But you just got to feel
Totally
for,
agree.
you got to feel like a guy for Damon Arnette, man. Back-to-back weeks, obviously going down, and it's just, you don't want to start painting with a broad brush, right? He's a rookie. It's week 13. You look at Abram from a year ago and what he's been able to do since he got back on the field. But you just feel so bad that the expectations for this kid were so high coming in. We've seen glimpses of it, but he can't find a way to stay on the field. And it really does seem like it's through no fault of his own.
Yeah, it really does. I mean, he's a physical guy. That's part of what they knew in getting him, that he was going to be a guy that's not afraid to make a tackle. And a couple of times he stuck his head in there, literally. And, or had other guys hit him, kind of friendly fire type of things, where, again, that's no fault of his own, and he gets knocked out. And for this one, too, I was just kind of like, oh, man, I felt so bad for the guy. Second play of the game, and he's out. I mean, you could tell right away it was lights out. I mean, body went limp. So you got to hope that he's okay, hopefully, for this Colts game. I mean, he just went through the concussion protocol. I've never luckily dealt with any crazy stuff with concussions and stuff, but I've had some friends that have, and we all know that's no joking matter. So, I mean, hopefully he's able to get through this one okay, especially back-to-back weeks dealing with that. But yeah, I mean, there's not a whole lot you can do, you know, in terms of that. I mean, sometimes it's just going to happen, and then the thumb thing missing the time. But I think once they get him paired with Mullen out there on a consistent basis, because I agree with you, I think Mullen is very underrated. I don't think he gets the love that he should. And I think Damon, you know, as he gets more time under his belt and gets to show what he can do, I think he's going to impress a lot of people as well in coverage.
You know, you bring up a great point, too, about this being kind of like a human being issue, not, you know, first, not a Damon Arnett football issue. It's like, you got to make sure Damon is good as a person, right? You got to make sure he's healthy, he's able to go. I mean, we've obviously dealt, all of our worlds have been changed by COVID, and we kind of tend to kind of dismiss the other injury stuff. But, like, the head injury stuff is no joke, and you got to make sure Damon is good to go. He's able to bounce back. He's able to get healthy and do it kind of on his timeline. And then hopefully once that happens, he's able to go out there and start balling. But, Jesse, before we move on and we talk about the Colts and get on out of here, but I'm kind of curious for your take on this, where people, like all the guys, all the buddies in the department kind of give me a hard time, because I don't care who we're playing. I don't care what the situation is. I don't care anything. I want to run the ball. This is a run first team. When we've seen them at their best this year, they are a run first team. They got away from that in the first half, 14 rushing yards at the half. No good. They kind of return to it a little bit in the second half. And you look on that first first drive, where it changes this offense so immensely when Gruden can get his guys rocking and rolling on the ground. It's two completely different offenses. And I know that you didn't have Josh today. And I know that this offensive line is not healthy 100%. I get that. But at some point, force the issue. We put Derek in so many great positions, but don't make him do it all himself. You got these dogs in the backfield. Let them go.
I agree with you 100%. I mean, they had, 14 yards in the first half rushing? I don't know how many carries that was on off the top of my head. I'll have to go back and look that up. But, yeah, I mean, we saw them start to try to establish the run on their first drive of the second half, and it worked. I think, if I remember right, I think they had 39 yards on that first drive rushing of the second half.
And, I mean, on that first play from scrimmage in the second half, Booker goes for a 14-yard run and literally eclipses what they did in the first half. So, like, they were committed to getting going in the second half. I just wish so badly that it goes back to being a constant theme for Gruden and this team.
It should. I mean, and I think he wants to. Maybe he just, you know, saw, hey, look, it's not there. And that's the one thing this Jets defense does well. I mean, I went back and looked because I heard everybody talking about that throughout the week. And I was like, okay, but like how many rushing attempts have they faced? Because they're a bad team, so teams are probably throwing on them. And they actually face a decent amount of rushing attempts. So they're legit, like, you know, decent run defense in terms of that. I think they were giving up 3.8 yards per carry entering the week. The Raiders averaged 2.9 today. So, I mean, look, it's a good run defense without Josh Jacobs and, like you mentioned, a patchwork offensive line. But this is what they've got. This is the NFL. We've seen what Booker can do, and we've seen him do it as, like, kind of a, you know, a spelling type of guy. You know, he'll hop in and spell Jacobs and do well in that role. But today I really wanted to see Booker be that lead bell cow type of guy and take this thing, you know, the bull by the horns, if you want to throw it out there, and show what he can do against a bad defense. And we didn't see that. I think, yeah, maybe they went away from it too soon, but also that's kind of the flow of the game. I mean, you're in a, not a shootout, but you're in a game with the Jets where you got to figure something out. And what they had going for them was a short passing game, but they do, because this offense works so well when you have that running game going.
Yeah, I mean, it's we all know the formula. We've all talked about the formula for success for this team in 2020. Regardless of who the running back is, whether it's Devontae, whether it's Josh, whether it's Jalen, whoever it is, Theo Riddick today I thought had a few nice moments. Whoever it is, just run the ball. And then let Derek work off of that. Let him be kind of the creative maestro to everything that Gruden wants to do offensively. And 9 times out of 10, it's worked out pretty well for this team. But at the end of the day, Jesse, we're talking about a win. The Raiders are still alive. Somehow, someway, they are flying back to the desert with a win. They are 7-5. They control their own destiny. It looked so dark there for a while, but they are alive. They are thriving. And now we got a very, very big game against the Indianapolis Colts coming up. And before we talk about that, before we get into that, crack a few ice cold Coors Lights and get on out of here, let's just hear a quick message from our friends at Allegiant.
Touchdown, Las Vegas.
Since starting Allegiant some 20 years ago, we've flown more than 100 million people to be with those they love. We're pilots, flight attendants, and technicians, but we're also parents, spouses, and neighbors. And just like you, we're excited to reconnect with the people and places that matter most. That's why we're going the distance for health and safety, on the ground and in the air. Because the further we go now, the safer it'll be to go farther tomorrow. Allegiant, the official airline of the Las Vegas Raiders. Low fares, nonstop flights, only at Allegiant.com.
And a big thank you to our friends at Allegiant, back with Jesse Merrick from News 3LV. And Jesse, you know, we don't get to say this that often, but I mean, essentially, we have a playoff game coming up this Sunday with the way that the AFC is kind of shaking out. Your Las Vegas Raiders taking on the Indianapolis Colts. And, oh, brother, this is going to be a fun one.
Yeah, no, it is. I mean, this is one of those games, one of two games for them where you play a team that's in front of you in the standings and, you know, you can win and also hurt them at the same time, you know, directly. So, I mean, this is as close to a playoff game as you're going to get before the playoffs actually start. And hopefully the Raiders enter in on that party. If you want a shot at that, you have to win this game. So it's going to be interesting, man. I mean, we've seen what the Colts can do. Their defense is all the talk, but big, big, big game for sure.
Yeah, I mean, no doubt about that. And obviously, you love that this game is in Vegas. You love that it's at Allegiant.
Yeah.
I mean, God, can you imagine what that place would be like if fans were in the building? My goodness. But at least you still get to come home. You get to enjoy that home cooking for the week prior. But this is another one of those kind of gut check games. And I feel like we've been talking about that all, you know, gosh, the last month or so. Like, the Raiders need this one. The Raiders need that one. But they really need this one. And if you want to be the type of team that we think the Raiders can be in 2020. Now, granted, I know today was not the sexiest win that any of us have ever seen. I know, you know, it was so funny where I was getting blown up after the game by all my buddies were like, well, you snuck away with that one. It wasn't great, but you figured out a way to do it. And they're right. It wasn't pretty. It wasn't overly enjoyable to watch until that last, you know, 2 minutes of real time. But if the Raiders are the type of team that we think they can be, you got to take care of business at home. And you got to thank the schedule makers that this game is in Vegas. It's not in Indy. But boy, oh boy, like, this is it, man. I will have to kind of see how everything plays out in the next couple of days to look at all the scenarios and the playoff situations. But, like, it does feel like there is a really, really, really low chance for this team to get in the playoffs if they don't take care of business on Sunday.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think, you know, I think if they lose this one, they're in a world of hurt. Talking on Raider Nation Radio earlier last week, I said, you know, of these two games of the playoff teams that they're going to face here between this team, the Colts, and the Dolphins, I said that the Dolphins was going to be one that maybe sneaks up on them and they lose. I think they're going to win this game. But, you know, and I think also this back-to-back stretcher that they had against the Falcons and the Jets hopefully will be kind of that slap in the face of like, hey, guys, you got to be locked in. I mean, this is the NFL. It's going to be hard no matter who you're playing against. So I think that'll get them kind of locked in. The one thing, if we maybe jump on a bit of a, you know, scenario or self-scout type of thing coming up here, I think the Raiders got to watch out for Nyheim Hines out of the backfield for the Colts. I mean, he's a guy that's, you know, a speedy guy that kind of does a little bit of everything for them. And we've seen the Raiders have issues covering, obviously, some tight ends and running backs out of the backfield. So I think that's something they got to figure out a way to slow him down. And obviously, T.Y. Hilton and everything that comes with that. But hey, it's Phillip Rivers. I mean, maybe you can force him into some mistakes. The guy's a gunslinger. You know, make him think a little too much. He's old, you know. Maybe test that arm a bit.
Yeah, I mean, look, Phillip Rivers is... Like, if you're a fan of the Silver and Black, the dances with Phil Rivers over the past 15 years, you're very familiar with what Phillip Rivers does. And he's one of those guys, man, where even though he's, gosh, what, pushing 40 now, he's one of those guys where he can just turn it on. He can have one of those crazy days. Like, if I told you that today Phillip Rivers threw for 400 yards and 5 touchdowns, you'd believe me. You'd be like, yeah, I'd buy it.
Yeah.
But if I also told you that Phil Rivers threw for 180 with 3 interceptions, you'd believe that too. So
exactly,
you gotta take your, you gotta take it, excuse me, you gotta take advantage of your chances with Phillip Rivers. You gotta make him the guy that's gonna beat you. Like you said, this team is very talented. The defense is obviously, we know what they bring to the table. So it is gonna be a really, really good battle. We're gonna talk about it a lot over the next week, and it's good, man. It's good. You want this game at home. You want to be in this position on December 6th today to be talking about playing meaningful football. And that is not something that this team has been able to do in a while. Obviously, you were able to do it last year. You're kind of hanging on by the skin of your teeth in 2019, but it feels different in 2020. Last year, you needed a lot of help, and thank the football gods, where the Raiders literally got everything to break their way over the final month of the season to be playing meaningful football week 17. But this year, they're in the driver's seat. They are the ones who control their own destiny, and we are going to find out a lot about the 2020 iteration of the Silver and Black over the next 28 days, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, no, I mean, we definitely will. And I think one thing that's great, if you want to look to progress, they've already matched their win total from a season ago, you know, and we still have, what, four games to go? You know, so that's huge in order to be able to do that in terms of the progression of, you know, building this team under Gruden and Mayock and everything like that. So to have that at this point with the games that they have left, the schedule that they have left, you have to like where they're at. And again, you're engaged. You are still engaged. You still have a shot. You can watch and actually see meaningful games at this time of the year. I know for Raiders fans, that always hasn't been the case. I mean, I saw on Twitter today in this one, everyone already, and again, we talked about how if they lose this game, we think the season's over, but I saw all the Here we go again. Well, hey, you don't have to do that right now, you know, and that I think is huge for Raider Nation. It's huge for Vegas and the new Raiders fans that have hopped on board as well, you know, and to get a taste of what it's like playing playoff football here in December, because that's where they're at right now. Like we said, this is a playoff game and it's exciting, man. I'm fired up for this final stretch here. And we talked about it all last week leading up to this. This team is just different than they were last year. They feel different. You know, I think last year's group loses this game against the Jets here today. Obviously they did, but I mean more so in that situation. So it's a different breed of guys. It's a different team. It's more exciting. And I'm really fired up to see the finish of the season. You know, and I hope Raider Nation is able to celebrate at the end of the year with a playoff appearance.
Yeah, me too. I mean, you bring up a great point too, where you just look at Vegas, right? Where we look at the new market, we look at all these new people that we're bringing on board, and we're obviously very grateful for every single one of them. We love our fans from LA, we love our fans from the Bay Area, and now we're welcoming this whole new family in from Nevada, and it's, you want to put up a good show for them. You want to show like, hey guys, look, it's not the same old Raiders. We're here, we're playing meaningful football, we're playing good football, and we're going to do our best to kind of elevate Las Vegas, elevate Nevada, and have a lot of fun, and hopefully do it with a little bit of pizzazz, too. But Jesse, before we get out of here, it's about that time. Let's crack some ice-cold Coors Lights, and my goodness, we deserve them. We deserve something a little bit harder than a Coors Light after what we saw today. But you know the deal. Guests go first, so the floor is yours, sir. Who are you cracking one for today?
All right, so, I mean, I got to do it for Rugs, you know, and I think I know who you're going to do one for, but yeah, I got to crack a cold. Old one for Ruggs, you know, the redemption, you know, getting over the what was a horrible game for him, you know, leading up to that, you know, with the pass off his hands that turned into the interception, you know, with the fumble, and then he comes back and totally redeems himself. And if I can hand out maybe like a shot or like half of a drink as a number two to your boy Jalen Richard, because he actually, if you go back and watch that play to Ruggs, came up with a big block in the pocket and pass protection in order to allow Derek Carr to step up. And I had gotten on him right before the half because he had two pretty decently bad pass protection moves there that allowed him to get sacked twice there. So one to Henry Ruggs and like a shot or whatever you want to give to Jalen Richard for his pass protection.
Love it. I mean, Mayock's talked about it a lot. I mean, obviously we haven't heard from Mike in a while, but, you know, Gruden has talked about it a bunch where Jalen is one of the best third down backs in the NFL. And those are the moments where Jalen needs to make his money. And especially on, you know, kind of down the stretch of that game, he did. So we'll give a little bit of love to the Rocket. And he's a friend of the program, too. So double up there. But let's see. I'm going to crack a cold one. You got to go for Waller, man. You got to give it to D-Wall. He goes for 200 yards. I'm waiting for game notes to come through from Raiders PR just to see exactly what kind of obscene stats they're going to pull out, how his tight end performance ranks through 13 weeks compared to other guys historically. I mean, he was a stud today. You know, I think that going into every week now, defensive coordinators know that Derek wants to get Darren going. Like, he's not a secret anymore. He wasn't really a secret last year either, but especially now, defensive coordinators know that D-Wall's got to eat. And we're sitting at Allegiant and we're watching the game and we all know where the ball's going. So if we all know where the ball's going, Greg Williams and that Jets defense for sure knew where the ball was going and they couldn't do anything about it. Darren ate. He was an incredible performance. And you talk about being a good guy. I mean, it can't happen to literally a better dude with a better story. And, you know, it's great. And I will give a shot since you gave one out. So I'm going to hop on board. I'm going to give a shot to my guy, AJ Cole, who very sneakily had another awesome day. I think he got kind of robbed on that touchback. I was trying to watch the replay and it looked a little suspect to me. So I'm going to say that one should have been down at like the 6-inch line. But outside of that, AJ just doing his thing very quietly with some great flow now that he's grown out for the season. Looks great doing it. Style points for AJ, flipping the field when he needs to. So a big shout out to AJ, a big shout out to Darren. And man, it wasn't a pretty win, but it was a win nonetheless. So for Eddie Pascal, Engineer Jim, our guest this week, Jesse Merrick, and everyone else who helps get our little program from A to Z, we thank you deeply, humbly, and oh so sincerely. Raider Nation, exhale. We are still in the mix. Take a breath, enjoy a few cold Coors Lights tonight, and we will see you guys on Thursday for a normal episode of Upon Further Review.
Thanks for listening to this edition of Upon Further Review, presented by Coors Light on the official Raiders Podcast Network.